make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son, but be a...
Well, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Matt Santos with the Mile High Show, based out of Prescott, Arizona. And this is episode number 27. We're recording tonight at Brick and Bones Moonshine Bar and Bistro, one of my my favorite hangouts here in Prescott. And we're upstairs at Comedy in the Loft, the bricked-in loft area at Brick and Bones, out on the patio. We're going to sit down today with Gentina Moulton-Russell, a local stand-up comic and schoolteacher, actually. But she will be performing here in the loft tonight with her stand-up routine, opening the show for the DJ Mellow B and Day Day Comedy in the Loft show that they come and perform here every other Saturday in Prescott at Brick and Bones. This is the first time I'm going to get a chance to catch Miss Russell, but I am no stranger to her performance. She is a local, like I said, locally based. She is with, and no affiliation to the Mile High Show, the Mile High Comedy Theater. And if you remember, if you've listened to some of our back episodes, Cynthia Sobo, who is one of the founders of the Mile High Comedy Theater, was a guest on the Mile High Show a few months back. And just a couple of months ago, Cisco Ortiz and Jenny T sat in with me when we recorded at The Point before the Mile High Comedy Theater show at the Elks Opera House here in Prescott. They perform there. It's a mix between some stand-up, improv, sketch. They do it, I believe, three or four times a year at the Elks. And Gentina Moulton-Russell will be sitting in with us today before taking the stage at Brick and Bones for Comedy in the Loft. She's a very, very funny individual. I got a chance to talk with her for my radio show several months ago. But this will be the first time I'm going to sit down with her for the Mile High Show podcast. So thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. And we'll try and record some of her routine as well and maybe close out the show with that. So I want to thank the folks at Brick and Bones for letting us set up here in the patio. And that's enough chatter from me. Enjoy the show. Enjoy Gentina. And enjoy supporting all of your local artists, musicians, comics, everybody out here, and especially the local venues, the bars, grills, and coffee shops that have opened their doors and supported the Mile High Show. So check them out, and when you go in and visit, say, hey, the Mile High Show sent me, and see if they won't give you something free. I doubt it, but couldn't hurt to ask.
Man.
Well, thanks for sitting down.
My pleasure.
How many times have you performed up here with these guys?
I was just counting with my friend over dinner. I think this is my sixth time.
Sixth?
Uh-huh.
Over how many?
About 10 months.
10 months.
I've been doing comedy for
regular.
A year now.
Yeah. And how did the last shows go? I'm sorry, I haven't been able to make one of the ones at the Elks yet. I've been trying
missing out.
To. I know. How have they gone?
They've gone phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a chance to sit down, well, with you guys, you and Annie,
uh-huh,
at the radio,
yes,
when we were doing the radio, and then through the podcast here with Cisco, Jenny, and Cynthia before
great.
That.
Uh-huh.
So I've gotten the death stare to better show up next time or I'm
yes.
dead. Do you have, you know
we
off
know
the top of your head?
You. The next
when's
show?
It, yeah.
I do.
What is it? To give us a plug. What do we got at the Elks Opera House Theater?
At the Elks, it is, I believe, Saturday. Oh, see, now I put myself on the spot. August 16th, I believe.
Okay, we'll double check.
I'll double check that.
Yeah, and I'll put a link up to it and to the Elks and to the Mile High Comedy Theater, which you're a part of.
Yes.
Give me a little bit of history of how you got associated with Cynthia and the group over there.
Well, I'm a teacher at Bradshaw Mountain High School. I teach theater arts, and she is the media and yearbook teacher there. And she said, hey, I'm starting this comedy group. You should come. And I said, okay. So I thought we were just going to be playing improv games, and since that's what I teach, I said, well, I could learn some new stuff. I should really do this, and plus I just wanted to go have fun. meet some new people, and it turned into the Mile High Comedy Theater, and we started doing performances. And
so your original interest was not to perform itself.
I didn't know that was her intention. That
no,
was,
your intention.
I didn't know that was my intention either. But it just kind of happened, and it's been great.
Now, how much? What were you looking? What were you looking to get out of it when you first showed up? You said you were looking for some maybe some new tools.
Yeah, just some more tools to use in the classroom. And
what are you using? What were you using in the classroom prior to that?
Kind of the same old improv games that we'd been using for years, and I just wanted something more, something new, something fresh. I was starting to get bored. I could tell the kids were starting to get bored. And then it was also just a experience to get back on the stage, not necessarily at the Elks, I thought, but just in front of other people.
Back on. What was your performance history before that?
I performed in college. I didn't do any in high school. I was too afraid. I did backstage crew, and that's where I fell in love with theater, was in the backstage part. And I went to college to study stage management, and they said, you have to take an acting class. And I said, no, I don't want to. And they said, well, you can't get your degree. Yeah. You have to. And I said, okay. And I went to a very small school, and so there weren't a whole lot of students to draw from for directing exercises, or, you know, a lot of my student or my peers would direct.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, you need to be in my play. And I said, I don't want to. And they're like, well, you have no choice. So I just, by happenstance, got cast in a few plays, and I really started to enjoy it. And so, but that was really, after I graduated, I pursued stage management. I didn't get back on the stage.
You wanted to run stuff instead of having people
tell
you what to
do. I like being in control, yeah.
What was high school for you? Where was it?
Temple City High School, Temple City, California. It's near Pasadena. It's in the San Gabriel Valley area.
Some of this is coming back. I think we talked about this on the radio.
Yeah, we did.
My brain doesn't work past this morning, so
I understand.
I'm a little stuck. And college, what was college for you?
College was in Northern California at Humboldt State University.
That's right. Now I remember. I had family up that direction. Mm-hmm. What was home life for you? Were you brothers and sisters, siblings?
I have three brothers.
Where do you fall in?
I am third
there?
Out of four. So I was stuck in the middle of just a wild kingdom of boys, and I'm still stuck in the wild kingdom of boys. I have three sons of my own now. And
what are the ages of your sons?
13, 8, and 6.
Oh, my goodness. They're wild animals running through your house. What was home life for you growing up? The lone female in a boys camp.
It was tough. I had to learn how to get a really thick skin, but I really feel that has made me a better person today. Not that I'm a better person, you know, I'm more giving or whatever. I can just take a lot from people.
Take a lot of abuse.
And as a high school teacher, that's a very good skill to have. As a stand-up comic, that is a great skill to have.
That thick skin to be able to deflect the
to just
the
ignore
abuse.
Something. And, yeah, and not take it personally. And
what was home life like? Were the parents?
It was my parents. My dad is he's retired now, but Los Angeles County Sheriff's Deputy. My mom's a registered nurse. She taught Lamaze classes and other childbirth education classes and did education at the hospital. So it was very, a lot of my friends would tease me that I lived in Norman Rockwell's house. I said, if you only knew.
What was some of the trouble that the daughter and the sons of a deputy get into growing up?
Oh, I don't know if I should talk about that.
Nobody listens to this anyway. Yeah. Sorry. We're all right.
My dad certainly isn't. So normal teenage stuff, you know, have to rebel every now and then.
So it wasn't like the old, the typical, or the stereotypical, you know, kids of the pastor, the wildest kids in town.
No, that was my best friend growing up. She was the pastor's kid.
So that stereotype was true.
I was the cop's kid, and our other friend was the principal's kid. So
growing up where I did, is an urban area, pretty big city, and a couple of cops' kids that I knew were the go-to guys for dope and everything else to get in trouble.
No,
that wasn't
me.
No, okay, you behaved yourself pretty much.
Not in high school, but no, I'm just joking. You can't. It's hard to go to Humboldt State University and not take a horticulture class.
Yeah.
which I actually did with take a horticulture class.
The unlicensed pharmacist down the dorm.
In fact, I remember once that someone's dorm room had caught on fire because they were trying to grow pot in their closet. So just because you graduated high school doesn't mean you're ready for college.
So what kind of, what do your brothers do now? Are any of them in entertainment?
We just got back from Santa Fe for my oldest brother's wedding last weekend.
Nice.
And what a beautiful place and a beautiful couple and just a great time to be with my family. And he works for Trader Joe's.
Ah, plug to Trader Joe's. Yeah. Maybe get him on as a sponsor.
We love Trader Joe's. He's worked on and off for them since he was 16, and then he went and got a degree in psychology at Cal State Santa Cruz.
Nice. The Banana Slugs.
The Banana Slugs. Go Slugs. And so now he works at Trader Joe's and worked his way up to, I forget, it's a manager, but they call him like mates or... I don't know. They have weird nautical names for their crew members. So
crew
he's
members.
Happy. And
pirates.
Arg. My other brother, he's... my other two actually work in computers, so they have more money than I do.
Nice. They always have somebody to fall back on there.
Yeah.
So when did you start teaching at Bradshaw?
I started in 2004. So I took a couple years off, so I'm starting my 10th year teaching.
Always in the performing arts, in the theater?
I taught English for 3 years, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But so when the opportunity for me to come back to theater presented itself, I grabbed it.
What do you try and instill to your students as far as the benefits from taking classes that deal with performing and theater? Obviously not all of them will end up on stage or even behind stage. So what are you hoping that your kids, your students, get out of the experience of studying with you?
Self-confidence, confidence speaking in front of other people. It was great. Our valedictorian this year, Emily McGrain, she, in her speech at graduation, said the hardest class out of all her honors classes, you know, AP classes, was drama.
Nice.
And I can't take the credit for that. I wasn't her teacher. Mr. James Pieduck was. And she just said, you know, getting up on stage and having to talk or perform or do a monologue in front of her classmates was the most petrifying thing she had ever done. But she did it. And she said, I wouldn't be able to be on stage doing the speech now if it wasn't for that class. Which I tell a lot of the parents, I said, if all I can do is teach them good job interviewing skills, just be able to present themselves well when they're speaking, then I've considered my job done. And I see it happen. I had a student in my technical theater class. So these are really non-performing kids.
Yeah.
She refused. I mean, was in tears when she had to present her final project for the first semester. And so we made some accommodations for her. And in second semester, she just jumped up on stage and did her presentation. And I just sat there, and I'm sure my jaw was sitting on the table. And I said, wow.
Where'd you come from?
I said, what happened to you? First semester, you were crying, and now you just got up here and did it like you're a pro. And I said, I just looked around the class. I said, my day's been made.
And that goes across the board, like you said, whether they choose to go into the biz, as they say, or into performing of some kind, or just job interviews, speaking in front of coworkers, and that confidence level is huge.
It's amazing how many people I work with who are teachers who would be petrified to talk in front of their peers or other adults. I mean, they do it in front of teenagers all day, but you get a bunch of grown-ups in a room and they can't do it.
And I remember some of my teachers, you know, way back when I was in school, when one-room schoolhouse back in the olden days, some of the teachers, especially high school, very outgoing and very animated. And there were others that the lesson goes on the board, direction to the textbook, and they sat at their desk they wouldn't interact unless you needed some sort of direction or help on a one-on-one basis. And those are the classes I personally didn't get anything out of.
Mm-hmm.
Need, that's again, the warped brain in my head, kind of, it's more hands-on. I've got to try things and experiment with things before I can understand them. And when a teacher writes a lesson plan on a board and writes a page number and then buries his head in the newspaper, Mr. Yandell, that doesn't help any. So... can you see that with your students
definitely
gravitating towards you as a teacher and getting more out?
I would hope so. Yeah. I try to make my lessons very engaging. And there's kind of a progression. My advanced class, I mean, we were just constantly performing and creating scripts and working on projects. My intermediate class, they're learning more of the fundamentals of good acting and different approaches to acting. My introductory class is a lot of note-taking, but it's the history of theater. It's the foundations of why do we even perform, where have we come from, and a lot of them, you know, kind of, oh, why do we, this is drama, we should be on stage all the time. I say, well, you have to learn why you're doing what you're doing. You can't just get up there and think you're going to be doing Shakespeare like a pro. So they, you know, we muddle through the notes, but even then I try to use PowerPoints with funny things, and I'm always walking around the room, and I mean, by the end of the day, I'm exhausted, but I can't imagine teaching any other way. Yeah, those teachers that sit at the desk, and unfortunately, they still exist.
Yeah.
Even in this day and age.
I'm fairly certain Mr. Yandell still exists.
Well,
sitting at his desk.
You've been called out, Mr. Yandell.
Buried his head in the Oakland Tribune sports section. I remember you. What is your exercises, especially like the improv and things, how does that help develop teamwork and reliance on classmates and things like that?
With improv, you rarely see someone improvising alone. In fact, we went down to the Phoenix Improv Festival a few months ago, and there was a gentleman who did a one-man improv, and it was interesting, but I can't say it was very entertaining. Yeah. So you usually have someone else with you, if not more than one person. And you have to be able to trust them. You have to be able to kind of be in sync with where this scene might be going. You haven't rehearsed it, so you really have no idea, but to have that ability to just throw things back and forth, it's kind of like being on a baseball team. If you throw the ball, you have to trust that there's going to be someone there to catch it at its destination. And that's what improv is just you toss the ball out there and you just hope to God someone's going to catch it and do something with it.
Yeah, that being in front of an audience or a classroom or anything is just... It's one of the most terrifying things to speak in public. It always has been. It's kind of a cliche that's one of the biggest fears most people have, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Most
people,
it doesn't come natural.
Yeah, the Jerry Seinfeld quote that there's more people. The number one fear in America is public speaking. Number two is death. And so, if you're at a funeral, you're better off in the coffin than giving the
giving
eulogy.
And
that's something I always tell my kids: it's you're not alone.
And to be up there with a partner or with a troupe in an improv situation or a sketch situation, even when it's scripted, without the improv in the mix, even if it's something that's written out and scripted and rehearsed, you're still there relying on your teammates.
Definitely.
To carry their end and therefore carry you, and it's a terrifying to the observer to really sit back and look and say, no, I'm better off in the audience with my drink in my hand.
Yeah. Right, and that does it. Every year, the intermediate class does a melodrama performance, and I love the melodrama because it's big.
All right, educate a knucklehead. What melodrama? What would
melodrama
an example
is
of that
like?
Be?
You know, Dudley Do-Right and the. Damsel in distress who's tied to the railroad tracks, and you have the evil villain with the long
twisting his mustache.
You got it, you know it. And so the acting is very big, and it's
over
okay
the
to
top.
Be cheesy.
Yeah.
And teenagers tend to be a little over dramatic sometimes.
See, I would think the other way. Tapping into that emotion, most teenagers, at least the ones I know, and I remember me as a kid, kind of withdrawn. You're really reluctant to throw yourself out there. Is that how do you work with
the kids? They're reluctant at first, but then I think it's more. I just model it. I make an ass out of myself every day in my classroom, and I tell the kids, "Hey, if I'm up here and doing it, you'd have a blast. Yeah. It's fun in there." But I just say, you know, I don't care what you guys think of me. I'm just up here having fun, and that's what all you need to do too. And it's amazing when you put an audience in front of them, that energy. And I know what it's like because I feel it too when I perform. So to see them take the stage and trust each other and rely on each other and get it, and have that feeling. I've seen classrooms of kids who sit at the same table with each other turn into families. And it's just an incredible thing to be a part of and to witness. And they finally have people they can trust. And a lot of these kids don't have a lot of people they can trust.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing some of the bonds that they make. And some of these kids really need that.
Yeah.
And they need that environment.
It may be the only time they can really tap into the emotional side of things.
Right.
Yeah.
And it does help, I think. You know, that's why I do it. I was not having a really great day today. My kids were driving me nuts. It was raining.
And you've been sick.
And I was trying, and I've been sick, and I just got a new dog, so that's been stressful. And I went to the Mile High rehearsal today, mm-hmm. and I just laughed and laughed and laughed for an hour, and it totally changed my day. So that's the power of laughter. That's the power of performance, and that's what I hope to bring when we do our shows at the Elks. If I can make someone laugh, that's great. Coming up here at Brick and Bones and doing my show up here, if I can make a couple people laugh and they enjoy their evening, then that's all I ask. That's all
nice.
I want to do.
Now, you mentioned the student that you, in your class first semester, first term, who was in tears over the thought of performing.
Mm-hmm.
Think back. What was your first performance like? Was it in high school or did it happen in college first?
Well, my first performance that I can remember, I might have done some stuff. I did some stuff in church. But my clear memory of having to say a line, having to speak, was in middle school. I was in student council, and we had to do a skit.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying. Actually, now that I remember,
do you remember what it was?
I had to play an old woman. I had to play grandma. We were ordering magazines. You remember those fundraisers where you had to sell magazines to your unsuspecting relatives? And
TV Guide. And
I had to say something like, oh, Knitting Quarterly looks interesting. And I could barely get the words out. It was horrible. I was so embarrassed. Actually, in third grade, I think I did a skit, something about America.
Yeah.
You always have to
some
do
school,
these little school things. But my first scripted, rehearsed, on stage a performance was in college.
Yeah. And that, you didn't have the performance bug right off the bat, huh?
No. I kind of went in kicking and screaming.
What was the performance in college? Do you remember what it was?
I can't remember. My first one was probably just directing exercises that the directing class used the acting class to do their directing exercises. My first major, major play was a three-hour-long play with four people in it.
Yeesh. And talk about stage time.
Yeah. It was a lot of stage time. And I actually had to pretend to be asleep on stage for a good half hour. And one night I almost fell asleep. That's when you know you need to...
Now, who was the famous corpse? Wasn't that Costner? Kevin Costner was the corpse
in the Big Chill. So you never know when you're going to get your big break.
Who knows? You could be in Waterworld 3.
My students always talk about Johnny Depp. I mean, long live Johnny Depp. He still is winning the hearts of teenage girls everywhere. But I remember Johnny Depp as the teenager in Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one. He was in that.
No, never saw that. I'm not a horror film guy.
See, I didn't want to see it either, but my brother and his friends were older. They were about 16. I was about 12, and they made me watch it with them.
Scary movies still scary. I can't take
them. I don't do them either now.
I'm not a fan of the genre.
I'm stressed out enough. I don't need to sit for another hour and a half being anxious and stressed and feeling that way. I just don't enjoy it.
So when you first joined Cynthia at the Mile High Comedy Theater, what were some of the exercises you were doing? Do you remember?
In the theater group?
Yeah, in the group.
A lot of the same ones we still do today. They're kind of the tried and true. Anyone who does improv knows these exercises, but she's also been really good about introducing new ones. Some of my favorites are the game Yes And. We played it today. It was one of the first games we played, and it involves just someone saying something. Could be completely outrageous. You know, look, there's a unicorn in my bedroom and you have to say yes. and it's and making a mess of your laundry pile or something, and you just always have to accept and give something back. And that's the basic tenet of improv, is just the acceptance, yeah. And then so that, like, just throwing the baseball back and forth. You know, I got it, and here it's back to you, and let's hope, hopefully it's funny.
I don't know if I mentioned it in the intro, but we're at Brick and Bones out on the patio upstairs, and Sir Harrison Band is playing downstairs. So we're going to muddle through here, and our mics are picking up a little bit, but don't forget to not only support local entertainers on the comedy front, but make sure you cruise by and check out the local music, too.
It's a beautiful night out here,
gorgeous.
Too.
Gorgeous. Now, with the Mile High Comedy Theater, your shows are a mix between some stand-up, improv, and sketch. What's your preference?
Oh, I don't know. About 6 months ago, I would have said improv, definitely. I wrote a sketch, and I got a lot of really good feedback from it. It was
get in there
fun.
Nice and close. We'll try and drown out the guitar a little bit.
There, I created a character, just this very dysfunctional school nurse, and she was so much fun. I hope to bring her back at some point. Our last show, I got to play a very curmudgeonly, grumpy old man.
To the old people, just like in
Hank.
Junior high.
Exactly. People must look at me and say, she'd be perfect as an elderly person. I was a little unsure at first about playing an old man. I thought that would be too much of a stretch. And I have to admit, I loved Hank. You can say the nastiest, most racist stuff as an old man, and people just laugh at you. They're just like, oh, it's just Hank. And I said, you guys, it's not okay for anyone to say that.
I can't wait to get old. Older,
yeah,
then I can
really
do whatever I want.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Now, I think I'm just going to stop dyeing my hair and using all my face products.
And
bring it on.
For anybody that hasn't, and I should have asked this right off the bat. I've been pronouncing your name about three different ways.
Okay.
Jantina?
That's it.
Okay.
You got it.
For anybody that hasn't seen Jantina perform in any fashion, mistaking her for an old man is the farthest thing. So that's going to take some really stretching those acting muscles if you're pulling that off.
I hope I pulled it off. People laughed, so they might have just been laughing because I look so ridiculous in a wig and glasses.
What was your first night doing a stand-up routine solo? When was that? Where was that?
That was at... It's Fondue Distillery.
Uh-huh.
Great place. Have you been there?
Yes.
Oh, it's awesome. I need to get back there. Kathy Cohen, who's one of the board of directors, or she's somehow involved with that. She was in our stand-up class, and she was gracious enough to talk to them and got us a spot. Cool Azul was playing, and during their break, we got to do stand-up.
Oh, nice.
And we were the filler for the band. And we had 5-minute sets. That was it. And we got five. And I was just terrified. I was shaking my hand in the microphone. And I was sure everyone could see my hand shaking. And I made it through. And people laughed. I said, okay, let's try this another time. And I talked to Bobby up here at Brick and Bones. And got a gig up here. And again, was terrified. Did about 7 minutes. And just last month, I don't even know how long I performed, over 10 minutes in front of over 200 people.
Oh, nice. Where was that?
That was at our last Mile High theater
show.
The
one I didn't go to?
Yeah.
Another one I didn't go to?
We'll get you there one day.
Yeah. August. But I'll be there in August.
It was an incredible experience to just think in a year, because it was July. Last year I did my first show.
Now your stand-up routines, are they strictly yours? You design them, you write them, or is it a collaborative with the other troupe? Or?
No, I write all my own jokes. When I first started, I was taking a stand-up class with Cynthia as part kind of an offshoot from the Mile High Comedy Theater. I mean, she is great in offering classes outside of just the performance group. And we would workshop ideas. You know, people would say, oh, that's funny, or how about this? And so some of my jokes were, you know, just offshoots that people said, oh, we'll try this instead. And and that's the nice part about working with other comics is the collaboration. If you get people that are willing to, you know, and you always have like, oh, I'm going to steal that. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, sure, that's fine.
Yeah. So, but that's what the workshopping's for, is to bounce ideas, make sure they're working, or the ones that aren't, to cut them.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you had any nightmare performances yet? Anything that
No, thankfully. I've had some jokes that just fell flat, but, you know, you just go on to the next joke.
Yeah.
And not let it bother you. You just look at it and say, okay, either I rework this or I just forget it. I'm always trying out new stuff, and so if a joke falls flat, it falls flat.
Yeah.
Oh, well. You know, just move on.
That always cracks me up when I hear or read, you know, YouTube clips or something on, you know, either some of the locals that I've talked with here or even some of the national acts. You'll see these comments, and it's like, well, I saw him at so-and-so comedy store. I saw him at the improv, and, oh, he was a he's horrible, he's not funny.
Right.
And you think, well, that same routine on a Friday could fall completely flat. On Saturday, different crowd, different energy.
Yeah.
It'll kill. And you never hear somebody say, oh, I went to the Diamondback game and that guy struck out. He's a horrible ball player. Well, no. It's a long season. Stand-up's a long career, hopefully. You know,
I'm just doing it for fun now. I mean,
But, yeah, the way people determine how successful somebody is it amazes me that I saw him once, and then especially online comments, because boy, so
being
brave.
Anonymous.
The other side of that is I definitely am not in this group, but people have said over the ages, well, women aren't funny. You, of course, are an answer to that. Some of the greatest comedians, you know, Joan Rivers, Lucille Ball.
Oh, yeah, bless them.
Phyllis Diller. It's hilarious. Yeah. I mean, it's just... And then some of our locals, Cynthia, her act. I've heard some of Jenny T's clips. And how do you answer that? How do you answer to the naysayers?
It's hard. I think it's tougher for women to prove that they're worth, you know, a ticket price, that they're worth listening to, that they're worth going out and or promoting, taking the risk of the financial investment into a production for them. But they're really funny. Sarah Silverman is one of my heroes.
She's
hysterical.
I think one of the tops now is Amy Schumer.
I just started watching her show. I actually prefer the sketches more than her stand-up.
Yeah.
But she's very, very funny. She's very brave. I mean, she says things that I would never. But I laugh at them. I guess you kind of have that freedom when you don't have kids. I think I have to kind of always keep in the back of my mind, like, okay, someone could be recording this, and at some day and age, my sons could be listening to this. I always keep them in mind, and the fact that I'm a teacher, but just me personally, I find so much humor in just everyday things. Not to say that I don't go there. I mean, I'm.
Especially on the improv, because you're going off of audience suggestions a lot, correct? So it can go a lot of different directions.
It can go anyway, and that's... The improv and the sketches in those shows, to me, are a little bit different than stand-up. You still are playing a character. My stand-up character is still not me. The jokes and the stories I tell are very loosely based on real life experience.
Now, do you work with your stand-up? Do you work your kids into the act at all? Or
I mention them.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not happy. My oldest isn't happy about them. only because I talk about how they just pee all over the toilet seats. So he's just like, I do not. And I said, yes, you do. And
That was a badge of honor in our house.
it's a guy thing, and as the only female in a house of boys, it just, I'm used to it. I've grown up with it my whole life, and I'm dealing with it now. It's nothing I'm horribly disgusted by.
We
but
find
I just,
that
I'm
at our
still...
house. We have a 5-year-old son, my wife and I. Very late in life did we have kids. And I'm just showing him how to use the outside, and we don't have that problem.
Right.
The neighbors aren't too happy about it because I have to show him how to do it. But it's freeing for me, I guess.
Try the backyard.
We got people right behind that fence.
Oh, okay.
And in the front.
We're lucky.
We live in an apartment.
No, I'm just kidding. Off the deck. It's cool.
Is there anything that's off limits for you, comedy-wise?
I'm not a fan of degrading women. There are certain words I will not use. And I was told in the beginning, Kevin Rose, another great comic, he just said, hey, you know, any piece of advice I can give you, there's two words you just don't say. And I'll just leave it to the imagination of what it is. It's probably not too hard to figure out.
And I forgot to tell you beforehand, we do keep this radio friendly, so thank you for that. I forgot to mention that.
And, well, I just, it's, I just don't say them because of personal preference, but I also, it's hard for me to watch other females put down females.
Yeah.
And that's what's great about good female comics is they uplift other women. They're not putting them down. They're not calling them horrible names.
How helpful is it that you kind of studied under and learned from Cynthia, who has a great history with stand-up and is a strong female stand-up?
Just the professionalism that she always demands. The more cerebral part of the writing, the crafting of the jokes. There is an art to it, but there's also a science.
Yeah.
Just like writing plays or writing a novel, there's a certain formula that you can apply. And it works. And it's when you learn it from somebody who's done it, and it's probably tried a variety of different approaches, it's great to kind of just cut to the chase and not have to muddle through it myself. And being the educator that I am, and I'm always learning. I had actually years ago, some of my students said, I want to learn stand-up. I said, okay, I'll get a book. So I read a book, and it had some helpful suggestions, but it's really nothing like someone just saying, okay, here's how you do it.
Is there anything better than to learn from than just doing it?
No, there's no replacement. Like you were saying, you know, most of us learn hands-on.
Yeah.
Just let me jump in and do it. And that is the best experience. Those jokes that bomb, those are great learning experiences because then you go back and you say, okay, why didn't they get that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just chalk it up to the audience's bad taste.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But it's just sometimes it's you think it's funny in your head and you get it, but you didn't explain it well enough.
I'm slowly twisting this table all over the place.
I think I'm leaning on it weirdly, too.
It's a little wobbly.
It is a little wobbly. You need a sugar packet.
I'm thinking, since these aren't noise-canceling, we're getting picked up a lot more than the music is. But I can... I think we're coming in strong. So.
Okay.
The structure and the program that the Mile High Comedy Theater does, there's with some... Facebook posts and some promotion for some open audition stuff, inviting the public to join in on some things. Talk a little bit about that, and again, tying in how it's not necessarily geared to just people who want to perform or want to write, but it's kind of open to a lot of different aspects of life.
You can come in. We've had a lot of people come in and just drop in on a class and have fun with us. Sometimes they click with us. Sometimes they don't, and they don't come back. I got the pleasure of meeting a very nice young man, which is weird for me to say because he's younger than me, and it's like it makes me feel... He was a very nice, respectable young feller that came in. I think this was his second class with us, and he was phenomenal, and... We're always looking for new members, but even if you don't want to perform, you can just come and rehearse with us and not be part of the performance group.
That like you use with your students to gain confidence and things. That's what we can all gain from, from doing. And real reasonable, too. I remember that the entry fees were pretty...
I let Cynthia take care of that part.
Yeah, I'll put a post up, but it was nothing. It was
it's
a cup of coffee a day kind of thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Very, very reasonable.
So, just to stretch your public speaking and confidence muscles in any aspect of life would be worth checking out the Mile High Comedy Gig.
I think so. I think it's really done a lot for me, not just with my professional... life as a teacher. I think I've become a much better teacher now that I'm performing again. But just in general, the confidence I have after I come off the stage is amazing. It's, if anyone's performed, they know that, you know, that high that you
rush,
get, whether it's an athletic performance. I mean, it's every time you're in front of a crowd of people, it's a performance. Whether you're using your funny muscle or your arm to throw a ball or whatever, it's a great feeling.
And satisfaction of being performing successfully.
Yeah.
And getting that immediate feedback from the audience that you get at a stand-up show like this.
Right.
Where can folks see you and hear from you and follow your career? Do you have a website or Twitter feed, anything like that?
Well, I have Twitter. If my phone actually wasn't a piece of junk, I'm going to get a new phone here probably this week. I'd like to be more out in the public.
Not real active on Twitter?
I'm not.
What's
so
the feed? Do you remember what it is,
I do know my handle. It's Aunt Gina Comedy. That's just a little inside joke.
A-U-N-T?
A-U-N-T-G-I-N-A-C-O-M-E-D-Y, I think.
You think? I'll try and track it down.
Yeah.
And then info on the Mile High Comedy Theater, milehighcomedytheater.com.
Milehighcomedytheater.com. If you're brave enough to friend me on Facebook, I might accept your friend request, depending on your profile picture.
I feel privileged because I'm on there. That's because I use my son as my profile picture, I'm pretty sure.
I know. I thought I was friending a really cute little five-year-old innocent boy. And turns out I was friending someone who pees in public.
Some slacker who drives around with a microphone. Well, we're getting close to showtime. I want to get you a chance to relax. Anything you want to hit that we haven't talked about? Or
I don't think so. I'm happy to sit and talk with you.
No, I appreciate
the opportunity to spend some time with you. And
who are some of, you mentioned Sarah Silverman. Who are some of the other comics that you enjoy? That you enjoy listening to it and watching.
Well, when I was growing up, I used to love Bill Cosby, but now I don't think I can love him anymore. I was so personally offended by that.
I still love him. I've got old LPs that I listen to, and I look forward to playing them with my son shortly. But the Bill Cosby of the 21st century leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, he was way more funny in the 80s.
Oh, I go back farther. I got some old 60s and early 70s LPs.
Yeah, oh, wow. Those must be great. It rings in my head when I'm about to lose it with my own children. The story about his wife, you know, the beatings will begin.
Yeah.
And
I love his old routines about growing up. When he, one of them was My Brother Russell with Love or something like that. And there's some old ones that kind of the beginnings before Fat Albert came about.
Uh-huh.
About him and his kids, his neighborhood kids, and all the shenanigans they used to get into. Who else? Who do you like listening to?
Eddie Murphy on the complete opposite side of the color spectrum in comedy. I loved Delirious. I just, my friends and I used to watch it over and over. And again, there's really a lot of similarities of just childhood stories, talking about his parents, talking about him and his brother, and just, I mean, of course, the language wasn't, you know, something I probably should be listening to at that age, but it was funny. It was so real. And it was just, it was great. And then Monty Python. Probably watching movies that were a little above my age appropriateness, but Monty Python and the Holy Grail was a staple in our house. And it really tickles me when I have students who are into Monty Python and will kind of get into this banter.
Now, one of my teachers, one of my high school teachers who did not just sit behind the desk, Mr. McDonald, who taught world history, and he did it through film. When we studied about World War II, we watched, I forget what movie it was. One of the old classic World War II movies. We watched John Wayne flicks when we were learning about the Old West. When he talked about the Dark Ages, we watched Holy Grail.
Nice.
In high school. So we got,
because that's such an accurate historical representation.
It was very accurate.
The Middle Ages and Dark Ages.
Yeah. But he made it fun. We didn't learn a lot, but we did deepen our appreciation for comedy movies.
So at least you got something out of it.
Then,
I can't say I even remember taking a history class, so you're better off than I am.
Well, thanks for sitting down. I want to get you a chance to take a breather and relax a little bit before you take the stage.
Yeah, I need to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm kind of a procrastinator when it comes to that, but we'll get something written down here and make it funny, hopefully.
Well, thank you very much. Enjoyed talking with you, and I'll be catching your show here in just a few minutes.
Great.
Brick and Bones, thanks.
Thank you.
Please put your hands together for the one, the only Jantinia!
But that's what it is. It's a way of life. It is not something you just dress up and pretend to be so you can get some free drinks down at Matt's. Because I've been to a ranch, and I have never seen anyone walking around in daisy dukes and a halter top with a pink sparkly cowboy hat and matching boots. Okay, I lied. Some of the sheep were dressed up like that. But if you ever saw a cowboy in a getup like that, he is definitely on his way to audition for the next cowboy gay porn called 50 Shades of Hey. Uncoordinated person, it always sounds like a good idea. My kids are like, Mom, that's my frisbee. I'm like, okay. And I throw the disc, and I always manage to like hit myself in the face. Because apparently I have like the physical ability of a cross-eyed nut addict. I love my kids. I have three of them. Three boys. So it's kind of like living in a frat house with, you know, three little drunken frat boys running around all the time. And they call me Scary Mom. My oldest the other day in the car, the younger two were screwing around in the back seat, and he's just like, you don't want to see Scary Mommy, do you? I was like, is that what you call me? I was like, yeah. And they play this game. It's kind of like Clue, but they call it Who? Because they're taking bets on when I finally snap, who's going to die? Little Stevie Wonder in the car with the cell phone. Or Puddles in the kitchen with a bottle of wine.